Welcome to the Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. I'm your host, Jessica Holmes. This month, stories from This Idaho Life, our October 2011 special tribute theme to Ira Glass and his inspiring and iconic This American Life. To introduce the theme and a one-minute Idaho story from Elizabeth Maketa, I'll bring you in on the night scene.
Hey, Idaho. No, not Iowa. Idaho. You know, potatoes. So famous, they're on the license plates. For most people in the world, that's all that's here. Potato fields, maybe some blue turf, maybe an Aryan nationalist or two. Little do they know what really goes on in this strange and strangely shaped, this wild and wondrous, this truly remarkable state we're in. All we know is we keep it to ourselves. Except maybe for tonight. Well, from Boise, what the uninitiated call Boise, it's Story Night. I'm Jessica Holmes, wearing Dan Costello's clothing, channeling Ira Glass. Each month, of course, we choose a theme and bring you a variety of true stories on that theme. This month's theme, a special tribute to This American Life and Ira Glass. It's This Idaho Life, stories of the state we're in. Can you tell how excited I am from the monotone of my voice? Stay with us. Before we begin our tour, a pit stop from 1 Minute Idaho. Now, this was a writing contest recently held by Boise State Public Radio to celebrate the upcoming visit of the actual Ira Glass on November 5th. The challenge, to sum up your idea of Idaho in 120 words, 1 minute. It's a hefty editing for such an expansive state, indeed, but some of our favorite featured storytellers from the past were up to the task, so we've asked them here tonight. First up, Elizabeth Maketa. You may remember her from January's Hooked, where she let us in on a harrowing chapstick addiction.
Midday on a Snake River camping trip, a rabid bat attacked my husband. I was pregnant, new to Idaho, and I didn't trust the wilderness with my big belly and my animal hunger. He got shots, we waited, and I wondered, where does this happen? In other places I've lived, nobody worries about rabies. If he died, would I stay in Idaho? Could I raise my daughter in this dry-grassed place where risk comes from nature and not people? Where poison hemlock grows wild? And where foxes pounce upon hand-fed songbirds? And where the blade between death and new life stays sharp? That blade is where the beauty lies, and where stories emerge. Before I knew that he would live, I had already decided that I would stay.
Now, featured storyteller Mike Medberry embarks on an odyssey of the body and mind at Craters of the Moon.
Well, thank you, Jessica. I appreciate your everything. I want to start with a quote from Virginia Woolf. She said that, she wrote, that beauty in the whole world falls off two edges. One is laughter, and the other is despair. And I'd like to start the rest of this story at the back and tell it now so I don't have to do it again at the end. Laughter, the first thing I want to say is laughter was really a big part of my recovery, and I hope that you will laugh at a few things because they're kind of weird. And then the other thing is that friendships are enormously valuable, and my friends have done a lot of good for me. They've stared me in the face, told me to look at life, and I got a lot from friends. And the third thing was the wilderness. You know, the wilderness in Idaho is phenomenal, and I went there when I was feeling blue and when I couldn't figure out what I was going to do, and I came out knowing what I would do. So I was a conservationist. I am a conservationist, an environmentalist, and four of us were going to go out into Craters of the Moon. Do you know where Craters of the Moon is?
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to go out to Craters of the Moon. It was Doug, Miguel, and Katie. And we went out, and we're going to go to Craters of the Moon. And it was a lava, a bunch of black lava. And, you know, I'd gone there a few times before. And it's in southeast Idaho, as I think a few people know. And we went out there to give a story to Bruce Babbitt. Bruce Babbitt was the Secretary of Interior, and he had a proposal that he was going to let loose on the world, and we wanted to influence him. We were environmentalists. We'd been working as environmentalists for about 10 years, and we knew exactly what we were going to do. By gosh, we were going to impress him, and he was going to follow what we did, of course. So we went out to Laidlaw Park. Laidlaw Park is a huge kapuka. Kapuka is a parkland that is surrounded by lava. And so we went out to Laidlaw Park and went to the north part of it. And this place doesn't have any trails. So we went up to the north, and we saw a lot of things. We saw the Pahoehoe lava, which is kind of like pavement. It's smooth. And we saw A'a lava, which is just kind of like A'a. It's like walking through broken glass. And it's kind of miserable. And we also saw the Blue Dragon flow, which has a titanium flow. It's beautiful, and it kind of reminds me of opium or some kind of weird thing. It's spectacular. And there are some other places that are just magical. There are, well, a bunch of things. I'll just pass on to it. We all went up through this place of lava, and it was cold. It was in April, and there were storms over there. There's a cloud over there. There's Virgo over here, and there was rain over there, and it was blowing, and it was snowing and raining and sleeting, and we got wet and cold and miserable. And so we all covered our heads with our hoods, and we got up to the summit Laidlaw Butte, and we talked about what was going on. And at that point, I had the most miserable headache. I mean, it was really a racking headache, and I tried to get some aspirin. I didn't have any. I asked Katie, can you give me some aspirin, Katie? And she said, yeah, sure, blah, 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 blah. And so we stayed there for half an hour, and we talked about what each of us had seen. Katie had seen that there was some vandalism on archaeological sites, and I'd seen this and that. And we turned around, went back down, and I was following, and I just fell, just flat out fell. And I tried to get up, and I couldn't get up. And I tried to talk, and I couldn't talk. My friends are just 100 yards away from me, and I couldn't get their attention. And I couldn't really get up. I couldn't do anything, and I was just laying there. And I laid there for an hour, and an hour and a half. And I was kind of crawling around in circles. And then it was 2 hours. And I got to tell the guys that it's not so bad to cry. You know, it's just life is going to rip it out of you, and you're going to cry. And it might not happen tomorrow, might not happen yesterday, but it will happen. And I suggest that, you know, it's a lot easier to cry than it is to be crushed. And, you know, might as well get some practice. So that's just to the guys, because I think the women understand that. So I was out there in the lava, and I was down. I was crying, and I was thinking about my father. You know, funny things come up to your mind. I was thinking about my father. He had had a cancer, and he had died 35, 40 years ago of a cancer and a brain cancer and a stroke. And I decided I did not want to die that kind of death. And so, you know, it's amazing what comes up to your mind after 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever it was. I'd lost track of time. So just then I saw Katie and Doug and Miguel were going across the lava because there were no trails, and they found me about that time. And, you know, they were horrified, and I was freaked out, and everything was a mess. And Katie took off, and she was gone for a couple hours, and it was starting to get dark. And then all these people came. It was just like, it was like fireflies. They had flashlights. There were 8 or 9 or maybe 10 people with flashlights, and they came, and they came slowly towards me, and they picked me up and moved me to a helicopter, and the helicopter took me off to Pocatello, and then everything changed. The pace was lickety-split. I was loaded into a gurney and taken into the hospital. I was poked and pricked, and things were taken out of my arms and legs, and I was patched and fixed up, and then I was put in this kind of round tube, you know, like when you drive across the road, they have a culvert, and I was in it, and it just went, and I was pulled out, and I was taken off, and at that point, I was told to rest. And I rested. I slept for 2 hours or 2 days. I'm not sure which it was. And I need to turn this kind of down like this, because the next thing I saw was a doctor was looking down at me, and he said, Mike, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, man.
Mike, can you hear me? Uh-huh. You had a stroke, and you're paralyzed. Yeah, that's what I wanted to hear. Mike, can you hear me? Yeah, you had a stroke, and you're paralyzed. Fuck you, man, fuck you. I didn't have a stroke. I was up there running yesterday, and I'm not... Mike, can you hear me? And he floated away. And I realized I had had a stroke, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. And so the next thing that happened was a woman came over, and she said she was a therapist, and I didn't realize I needed any therapy. She had a bag of tricks right here, and she looked at the bag of tricks, and she said, Mike, do you know what that is? I was like, yeah. And she said, okay, what are you going to do? So I picked up something, and I brushed my teeth, put it down. And she said, Mike, that's a comb. You use that on your hair. Okay. The next thing that happened was when I was in Boise, I was supposed to have a visit with a neurologist, and The neurologist was a very nice guy, and I went with my mother, who moved from Sacramento to Boise, and with a friend, and we went to this neurologist, and he was very kind. He said, "You know, tell me something about your life." And so, of course, I did. I said, "Well, you know, I got to tell you, I wasn't talking like that. I was just whoa, whoa, whoa. But I'm not gonna tell you that because I can't get it to you." So, I live here in Boise, and I live over there, and my wife lives over there, and our two kids live there, and over here is my mother, and my father is with her, and he lives in another town. And my mother said, "Mike, you're not married, you don't have any children, and your father died 40 years ago." So I learned something, and and the next thing that happened was more amusing. This woman came over to my house in Boise, and I was out in the backyard, and she talked at me, really. I wasn't able to really respond very much. But she stopped, she kind of halted, and she said, "Mike, do you have a stiffy?" "What?" She said, "Can you get a stiffy?" And, you know, it's hard to answer that question very directly. So, of course, I said, "Yeah, no problem. I had a stiffy yesterday, and, you know, it was just fine. It was really fun." And so she was a bit embarrassed, and she turned red, and she's a nice woman, and she left, floated away. But then I realized I was halfway paralyzed. Which side was going to work? And, you know, it's hard to understand what would happen, but so, of course, I had to figure out something, somehow, what was going to happen. And, of course, you know, I went to the internet, and and I found out that there's no reason at all why a person that has a stroke should not have sex. That was good news. And I also found out that, you know, the penis, you know, it's kind of a primitive tool or primitive organ, and the rest of the brain doesn't really know what it's doing. So that was another bit of pretty good news for me. I'm sure some of the men can understand it. But the other thing, the bad news, was that if you get depressed, you're probably not going to have good sex. So at that point, I decided I was not going to be depressed. For whatever reason, I was not depressed. So a year and a half later, I went out to Craters Moon, and, you know, it was a great thing. I'd been there twice before, and I saw that the land had been protected. It had recovered. It had really recovered. It seemed to be recovered. When Babbitt talked to Clinton, they had protected 750,000 acres. And that, to me, they protected it as a national monument and a preserve. And that was a great, great victory. And then I had come here, and I could walk, I could talk, I could crawl, I could think, I could do pretty much everything I could have done before I had that stroke. And I realized that I was really loved by my friends, and I found myself loving myself, and I found myself in much better shape than I had ever been. And I wanted to tell you, when you're on a journey, as I think you'll all be on a journey of some kind, that it's a lot better to look at laughter than it is to really consider all the despair that can embroil you in your life. Thank you.
Next, our Story Slam winner, Bruce Davidson, survives on sheer luck when an Idaho hunt snowballs out of control.
Here we go. Always in Idaho, don't leave town without your rabbit's foot. Early 80s, we'd been hunting plenty of times and never prepared fully, so we had gotten everything ready the week before and worked real hard on this, and we took these motorcycles, and the first thing that happens, we go across a bridge and an abutment, motorcycles fall off the trailer. Okay, my buddy, he fought with me the whole time, don't bring the motorcycles. Talked him into it, he looks back and he says, see? So we loaded them back up, put them back on, we get up to Loman, up Timmall Creek. So we're staying in a nice cabin up there, we got beer, we got food, we're ready to go. So we're up there, we get up the next morning, it snows that much on top of the motorcycles. Once again, don't bring the motorcycles. So I'm looking at him, I says, okay, let's just go hunting. We got all our gear, we got our boots, but we got the wrong clothes. So off we go. We go up Tamal Creek, and we're hiking, and we're going. We see JC, which is, Jesus Christ, he's big. Rack that big. It looks like he's got roots off a tree on his head. You're looking through your binoculars, you're like, he's mine. So we're going up this trail, and we're going. This buddy of mine, he looks across, and he sees more deer. And we're going, no, we got to have JC. He goes, no, we're getting this one. So I go, okay. So he shoots it. It goes down. Well, up there, that much snow, a deer hits the ground that steep. What does it do? It looks like a fucking toboggan going down the road. So he shoots this deer, and I says, you didn't hit him. He says, the hell I did. And I says, no, you didn't. Look at him run all over. He goes, I got that deer. So we sit on our asses because you can't stand on the ground. It's that slick. We don't have the right gear. We don't care. We're young and stupid. We're going to kill deer. So we get on our asses and slide after this deer. And you can see where it went down further and further. And all of a sudden, there's no more trail. Well, it hits the cross trail and jumps. I swear to God, 20 yards. So he picks up the trail and says, I'm not fucking going down there to get your damn deer. I'm going after JC. So he goes down. He gets his damn deer, waves me off. So I go after JC. I go clear to the top. There's snow falling. I'm up to here in snow. All of a sudden, it's snowing so much there's no more deer. The only stupid people out here is me. The deer are bedded down going, holy shit, it's bad out here. And they're probably looking at me going, see, you're going to die before we do. So I'm like, okay, uncle, I'm going to come back and kill your ass next year. So I head back down the mountain. Well, you can't see anything but fog and snow, and it's getting dark. I'm thinking, oh, I've been up this mountain 100 times. Well, actually 10. But so I go down the wrong side. And I remember my uncle saying, don't ever go down the other side. That's Blue Jay. You will die in there. He used to always say that. I'm like, no, I'm not on the wrong side. I go down. There's a waterfall. I've never seen a waterfall up there ever. I'm up to here. I've shot all my shells off, hoping somebody will come get my dumb ass. So I'm going down. Here's the waterfalls. I get to the road, finally. Prayed God I got out. I'm froze completely through. All I can feel is my feet. I'm shaking. I'm numb. I'm thinking, okay, in health class, they said, this is right before you die from hypothermia. So I get to a flat spot. It's still snowing, and I'm thinking, that feels like a road. So I just lay down. I thought, well, I'll find my body. Here comes a little Toyota pickup. Two guys, which now I look like them, pull up. They roll down the window. I'm laying there. I'm like, oh, please. They go, boy, you need a ride in town? Well, no, I'm just laying here going to take a nap. They throw me in the back of the truck. It's a little Toyota four-wheel drive pickup. They split the windows, and one's arguing with the other, "Hey, did you come down, Blue Jay?" And I says, "I think so." And they go, "Did you see a waterfall?" "Yeah." And the other one says, "The other says, see, you, there's another dumb son of a bitch did the same thing you did years ago." I'm like, "I don't care, I'm froze. Can we just go back to 10 miles?" So we take forever to get to 10 miles. Well, in the meantime, my buddy has already started to look for me. I get back to the truck. I'm flipping the lights off and on in the dark. I don't see him. I'm thinking, oh, shit, he's still up there. All of a sudden, I see this light. And it's moving kind of slow, but as he's coming down, it's getting faster. And I'm thinking, oh, shit, he's pissed. He's really pissed. And he gets down, and as we crossed the creek to get over, we had two pair of boots because you're up to here. So we'd wear our waders and then change on the other side. He didn't even change into the other boots. He jumps in the creek and comes running across the creek. I'm sitting in the truck. I locked the doors. He comes up, and he slams his gun on the hood. He goes, "Where in the fuck have you been?" I'm like, "I almost died up there, man. I'm sensitive. Don't yell at me right now." I'm wrapped up in a blanket. I don't even have any clothes on, and he's yelling at me. So we go home. We shoot another deer the next day. We only got two bullets left in the shells of the other gun because he had shot off his shells to shoot back and forth looking for me. So I want to go hunting. He got his deer. I wanted to get mine. So we go up. I seen a deer half the distance from where he shot his, so he's mad at me because we got to now carry both of them out. Our legs hurt so bad we want to die. So we both get them out of there. Of course, we get the trailer loaded up with the motorcycles. We're heading out of town. This is a week after this all started. We're happy. We're heading home. It's snowing again. We get to a little gas station right below the hills. You go up over Blooming. I reach down to check everything. I pull up on the trailer hitch. The trailer was never tied down. Never. It pulled right off the hitch. I gave it a hoist and up it come and I went. And I looked over, he's in pain for the gas. I just set it back down and tied it down. He comes out, he goes, "What's the matter? What'd you do?" And I says, "Do they got any rabbit's foots in there?" He says, "Yeah, they do." I says, "Go buy one right now. Put it on that goddamn keychain and don't ever fucking take it off." That's the end of my story.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week for more from This Idaho Life, stories of the state we're in. Learn more at storystorynight.org. For closing credits, let's go back to the show.
Let me tell you that our program tonight was brought to you by yours truly, your host, artistic and marketing director, our special events and outreach director, Anna Dimitriadis. Yeah. Our new business director, James Stead. We love you. Studio instructors, Elizabeth McKetta and Kate Riley, our amazing volunteers, especially my dad. Thank you so much, Dad. And our fabulous story focus group that helps select featured storytellers and themes. Music help is from the one and only Dan Costello. Our partners include Boise State Public Radio for broadcast, Neighborhood All-Stars for design, the Rose Room for our venue, thank you, Rose Room, and the Boise State Story Initiative headed by Clay Morgan for our founding partner. So, now is the time in the night before we announce the winner that I explain the joke in the poster. So I don't know if you've noticed, but Ira Glass is a potato. It's Spudra Glass, people. Spudra Glass.